Hi, it's Patrick Hutzel from intensivecarehotline.com, where we help families of critically ill patients in intensive care improving their lives instantly so that you can have power, influence decision making, and stay in control of your and your critically ill loved one's destiny whilst they are in intensive care. Now, in this video, I want to show you the 7 questions you need to ask the most senior doctor, most senior physician, or the most senior consultant in intensive care if your loved one is critically ill in intensive care. I'll also give you 1 bonus question at the end of the video. Okay, welcome to another video in intensivecarehotline.com's video series. And once again, congratulations on taking action in getting informed and taking control. Just by doing that, you stand out from the rest of the families in intensive care, and it will give you an edge when dealing with the challenges, difficulties, and complexities in intensive care. Our video series will help you finding your voice in the jungle of complexities surrounding intensive care. In this very important report, you learn quickly what 7 questions you need to ask your most senior doctor, most senior physician, or most senior consultant in the intensive care unit so that you are able to influence decision making and have power in the situation quickly. You'll also learn how to have more control and more negotiation power. How to position yourself well mentally. How to let the doctor know that even though you are not a health professional, you have a very good understanding of what's happening behind the scenes in intensive care, and that you are able to speak the secret intensive care language. If you ask the questions outlined in this video, you'll immediately stand out from the crowd and you'll immediately distinguish yourself from the rest of the families in intensive care. Just by asking the right questions, you'll find that you can shift the dynamics immediately. You'll find that doctors and nurses look at you differently than they do with other families of critically ill people in intensive care. It puts you and your family in a very different light, and you see immediate results. The video is designed and structured for families who deal with a very serious admission of their critically ill loved one to intensive care, where your critically ill loved one is either very critically ill, very unstable, and where the recovery and the future of your critically ill loved one is unknown, or where your loved one is expected to stay in intensive care for a long period of time with a long and slow recovery, or where your loved one is or where your loved one is in an end-of-life situation, and where you might have been told that your critically ill loved one is going to die, or where the situation of your critically ill loved one is very dire and the survival and recovery of your critically ill loved one is uncertain. The report might be less useful for families who have a critically ill loved one in intensive care who is a quote unquote straightforward admission and therefore is expected to go to the ward in a short time span. Now, also bear in mind that ICU doctors appear to be notoriously time poor, but you can have power, control, and influence if you know what to do, and this is what I'm going to show you in this video. You probably know that doctors appear to be busy people, and usually in a busy intensive care unit, doctors are notoriously time poor. Therefore, you need to be prepared and you need to know succinct questions to ask in order to have the most influence, the most control and power in your families, and in your critically ill loved ones' challenging situation. So, by now you have probably discovered that you are not in control of your destiny unless you learn techniques, strategies and get behind the scenes insight that will ultimately leverage your level of power, control and influence. You therefore need to learn the secret intensive care language, so to speak. If you have read or watched my previous free instant impact report, you already have a good feel and good understanding about what is really happening in intensive care and how you can effectively deal with and influence the situation quickly. If you haven't read or watched your free instant impact report or video, I strongly recommend you read or watch it, as you'll gain a lot of insight that will further help you to manage your challenging situation effectively. You can get your free instant impact report by downloading it from our website here at intensivecarehotline.com. Just enter your email if you haven't done so already. Now, let's get to the meat of it all. I want to give you a couple of basic principles before we get to the meat of the video. As you have probably read and learned in your instant impact report, it is critically important that you don't suck up to a doctor and that you don't put them on a pedestal. As you may remember, I suggest you treat them as your friend. With this in mind, let's get to the meat of the video so that we can dive right into the questions you need to ask the most senior doctor, the most senior physician, or the most senior consultant in intensive care if your loved one is critically ill in intensive care. I have to warn you though, some of these questions you might think are confrontational, but you need to ask them anyway. If you don't ask the right questions, other people will continue driving the bus, and you don't know in which direction they will be driving the bus, because you want to be and you need to be in control of your family's and of your critically ill loved one's destiny. You need to ask those questions, period. First question you need to ask the most senior doctor in intensive care: how does the intensive care unit's budget impact on my critically ill loved one's stay in intensive care? As you might know by now, every intensive care unit is generally allocated an annual budget. In public hospitals, it's usually a set figure for a financial or for a calendar year, whereas in a private hospital, it's more like a revenue target, as the funding is more like a reverse funding model where money comes in through activity. The annual budget depends on a number of things, including expected number of admissions, acuity of admissions, staffing, research activities, and so forth. On average, you can expect an ICU bed to cost $4,000 to $5,000 per day. This number varies slightly in different countries, but certainly holds true in countries such as the United States of America, Canada, and Australia as of 2013 and 2014. Now, let's apply those numbers to your critically ill loved one's situation. In order to apply those numbers to your and to your critically ill loved one's situation, you need to know another thing before we come to the meat of this question. You must know that intensive care beds tend to be scarce resources and they tend to be in high demand. I have very rarely seen beds empty in intensive care. There is usually a very high turnover of patients, even more so during winter times, but even in summer, there's generally a very high demand on ICU beds, with lots of outside activities happening, causing accidents like biking, cycling, swimming, etc. We are also living in times where we have a growing aging population and more older people get admitted to intensive care all year round. This is the bigger picture overview, and in order to apply this question that you need to ask the most senior doctor in the intensive care unit to your and your critically ill loved one's situation, I'll give you a quick real-world example so that you understand the connection between the ICU budget and your critically ill loved one's admission to intensive care. Let's say your critically ill loved one is 76 years of age and just had an out-of-hospital cardiac arrest after a severe heart attack. Your loved one has been admitted to intensive care and is now at the point where he or she is on full life support, including mechanical ventilation. The doctors and the nurses have been telling you that your critically ill loved one has a poor prognosis and that he or she may well die. The intensive care team is telling you and your family that they could escalate treatment and that the outcome would be uncertain, and that they think that if your critically ill loved one survives, that he or she wouldn't have any quote-unquote quality of life anyway. Now, patients in intensive care are different, and even people who have similar clinical pictures or diagnosis react and respond very differently to treatment. And if you have read or watched some of my previous free or paid reports and videos, you will have found that unexpected things happen in intensive care, as intensive care tends to be a highly volatile environment. These unexpected things can be good or bad. Now, in our example, your critically ill loved one's recovery may take quite some time, many days to many weeks, and therefore it would eat into the intensive care unit's budget. If the intensive care team decides to escalate treatment, it could mean to use an intra-aortic balloon pump, or it could mean to use expensive drugs such as levosimendan or Simdax to improve heart failure. Without going into too much detail, all I want you to understand at this point in time is that prolonging treatment with an uncertain outcome is going to impact on the ICU's budget and resources one way or another. Let's also say that in another bed space in intensive care is another 22-year-old patient who, after a severe car accident, has had multiple fractured bones and also had a severe head injury. He also has developed lung failure and he's now on special ventilation for lung failure. The intensive care stay for this young man currently costs around $7,000 per day, as treatment is more advanced and therefore more expensive. The prognosis for this young patient is poor as well, but given the patient's young age and also given the determination of the patient's family to do whatever it takes, the intensive care team has continued to carry on treatment. The intensive care team has also realized that the 22-year-old patient's family has good insight about what is happening in intensive care, and the family has certainly asked all the right questions in regards to their loved one's prognosis, expected future quality of life, and they have also asked about how the costs for their critically ill loved one's treatment might impact on the intensive care team's decisions about life-sustaining treatments. The intensive care team by now is well aware that the young patient's family would not accept a decision to limit or withdraw treatment on their critically ill loved one, period. Without going into further detail, both of those scenarios are occurring right now across most intensive care units, most of the time in one way or another. The scenarios are easily interchangeable, and therefore, to add even more controversy, it could well mean that the 76-year-old would be continued to be treated and the 22-year-old would have treatment limitations. In order for you and for your family to have maximum power, control and influence in those challenging and difficult situations, you need to have a heightened awareness of any surrounding issues or complexities that are occurring in intensive care all the time. It also means that therefore the intensive care team always faces huge and massive ethical and moral challenges and decisions. Therefore, it is absolutely crucial that you have a heightened awareness of these details, so that besides the clinical diagnosis, the clinical prognosis, and therefore the clinical realities surrounding your loved one's admission and critical illness, you also need to understand the movements, the politics, the power dynamics, the intrigue, and the psychology around you and around your critically ill loved one, so that you can ask the right questions that are addressing the issues behind your loved one's clinical picture and prognosis. Going back to our example, imagine your loved one's admission is at the end of a budget or at the end of a financial year, and the intensive care unit knows that an extended and lengthy intensive care stay of your critically ill loved one might well eat up the budget with the outlook of an uncertain outcome. Do you think that the intensive care team might rationalize their decisions in one way or another? Do you think they might rationalize that your critically ill loved one's age and his or her prognosis might contribute to the decision-making process? Do you think that if you knew what other patients are currently being treated in the intensive care unit, you would get a better understanding why the intensive care team might feel a certain way about your critically ill loved one and their prognosis? Do you think the intensive care team will continue treating the 22-year-old or the 76-year-old patient if they have to make a choice? Do you think the situation could be reversed if the family of the 76-year-old was more influential and kept asking the right questions? Do you think the 76-year-old would continue to be treated if the family didn't take no for an answer and if they kept firing the right questions to the intensive care team? Now, healthcare is all about fairness, not about money, and also about the level of influence you and your family have. Now, I don't want to open up more floodgates here, but I certainly do know that these scenarios are happening all the time, and I want to raise awareness. And since I consider myself a very strong patient and family advocate, I do also want fairness for all patients in intensive care. Healthcare should never be a financial issue, and it should always be a human issue first, period. I am not suggesting that intensive care units should treat hopeless cases, but in order to strengthen my point and my argument, I am definitely suggesting that all due consideration needs to be given to the families and to the patient's treatments first, and no quick decisions should be made, especially when it comes to limitations of treatment or withdrawal of life support. Intensive care units and certain senior doctors, physicians, or consultants can sometimes be very quick in deciding to withdraw or limit treatment in light of financial and other reasons. I have seen more than once that one senior doctor, physician, or consultant suggests a limitation of treatment, and as soon as the next senior doctor, physician, or consultant walks in, that he or she turns it all around and decides to go full steam ahead. I have seen it the other way around too. I could continue and carry on here, but I'm conscious of your time because I know you want to learn the things that are essential quickly. Question number two. You need to ask the most senior doctor in intensive care if your loved one is critically ill. How do differing views and differing outlooks between the intensive care unit's medical team and the parent medical team impact on my critically ill loved one's prognosis and recovery? Now, the parent medical team is the team that covers your critically ill loved one from a non-intensive care point of view. For example, the trauma team, the surgical team, the neurosurgical team, the general medical team, the oncology team, etc. You can also find more information on the parent medical team in our report or video, 10 Things Doctors and Nurses Are Talking About If Your Loved One Is Critically Ill in Intensive Care When You Are Not Present at the Bedside. So, what you need to know is, most intensive care units are run by senior doctors, senior physicians, or senior consultants who have special training in intensive care, and in some countries they are called intensivists. In some other countries they might be anaesthetists running intensive care units as well. It doesn't really matter whether the senior doctors in charge of intensive care are intensivists or anaesthetists, but what you need to know is that there are usually two different teams involved that are A, the intensive care team, and B, the parent medical team. So, who are the parent medical teams? You have probably met the intensive care team by now, and you may have met the parent medical team as well. If you haven't met the parent medical team, I'll quickly explain who they are and what they do. Then I'll explain some possible dynamics to you that might impact on your critically ill loved one's care. The parent medical team is the team that first took care of your loved one when he or she got admitted to hospital. If your critically ill loved one got admitted with a heart attack, chest pain, angina, heart failure, or cardiomyopathy, it would be the cardiology team. If your critically ill loved one got admitted for open heart surgery or a lung resection, it would be the cardiac surgery or the cardiothoracic team. If your critically ill loved one has been admitted with head injuries, skull fractures, or a brain tumor, it's usually the neurosurgical team. If your critically ill loved one got admitted with pneumonia, asthma, COPD, it would be the respiratory team. If your critically ill loved one got admitted for a bowel resection, gallbladder removal, or anything related to abdominal surgery, it's usually the general surgical team. If your critically ill loved one got admitted with a stroke, it's usually the neurology team. And if your critically ill loved one got admitted with cancer, it's usually the oncology or hematology team. So, who's responsible and who is making decisions? I am sure you get the gist, and you now understand that most patients in intensive care have two medical teams looking after them. The main distinction really is that the intensive care team is looking after your critically ill loved one during their stay in intensive care, and the parent team manages your loved one's care before and after intensive care. Before intensive care meaning operating room or theater, on the hospital ward, in the emergency room, etc. Generally speaking, the intensive care team is responsible for your critically ill loved one's stay and treatment in intensive care. Keeps the parent team informed, but as a rule of thumb, doesn't want the parent team to get too heavily involved in your loved one's care while in intensive care. There is, of course, always the exception to the rule. Again, here is an example from the real world. I once again give you a vivid example so that you understand how differing views and differing outlooks about your critically ill loved one might impact on their care and what you need to know about it, and more importantly, what you can do about it. In the example that I want to give you, imagine your 64-year-old father has been admitted to intensive care after the resection of a brain tumor. The neurosurgical team operated on him and they sent him to intensive care as a precaution. Your 64-year-old father has been diagnosed with a brain tumor 2 years ago, and he already had the first tumor removed 12 months ago. And now the tumor has come back, despite him having had chemotherapy and radiotherapy. Your father has come back to intensive care and he still requires mechanical ventilation, sedation, and is therefore in an induced coma. The intensive care team and the neurosurgical team are very optimistic that your father will be off the ventilator quickly and that he can leave intensive care in the next couple of days. After the intensive care team has decided to wake up your father, get him out of the induced coma, and take him off the ventilator, he doesn't show any signs of improvement and he doesn't seem to wake up despite all the sedation and pain medication being taken away. After your father has been taken off the sedation, he hasn't woken up and it's therefore not safe to take him off the ventilator. The intensive care team informs the neurosurgical team and they decide to take your father for an urgent CT scan of his brain to find out what is happening. A CT scan of a brain is basically like an X-ray of the brain. After your father had the CT of his brain, the doctors tell you that they couldn't find any clues in the CT as to why your father has not woken up. The neurosurgical team has told you that they believe that they have removed the whole tumor and they didn't have to cut into any other brain tissue that could have potentially damaged your father's brain. Anything related to the brain and to the head, from my experience, can turn out to be a waiting game, as the brain is the only organ mankind is still unable to control. despite modern technology and CTs and MRIs, the brain still remains a mystery. Your 64-year-old father is now completely off sedation and he is still not waking up. No sign of him opening his eyes, moving his arms or feet. The only thing he's doing is breathing with the assistance of the ventilator. After about another week of your father staying in intensive care, he still isn't waking up, even though he's now moving his arms and legs gently, but they're not purposeful movements. The intensive care team gets impatient and is thinking what they need to do as next steps. They can't take him off the ventilator as they are unable to assess whether his cough would be strong enough to maintain a safe airway. If your father continues to be ventilated, they would have to perform a tracheostomy, and the intensive care team questions whether that would be the right approach if your father isn't going to wake up. The intensive care team is therefore thinking about limiting or withdrawing treatment. The neurosurgical team or the parent team has a totally different point of view. They think and they know that sometimes patients after brain surgery simply just don't wake up quickly and they are taking their own time. It's similar with head injuries and or skull fractures. Those injuries take time and patients wake up in their own time if given the time. Some intensive care units, from my perspective, are prematurely withdrawing or limiting treatments on patients with head injuries or brain tumors. They simply don't want to invest the time, energy and resources a patient needs to recover. Going back to our example, the intensive care team wants to discuss further treatment options of your 64-year-old father with the neurosurgical team, as the intensive care team thinks that since your father hasn't woken up as yet and is not showing any signs of improvement, that a limitation of treatment and a withdrawal of treatment would be the way to go. They also mention that further treatment would be quote-unquote futile. In contrast to the intensive care team's point of view is the neurosurgical team's point of view, who wants to wait, wants to give your father more time, and they want the intensive care team to perform a tracheostomy so that your father is given enough time and a fair chance to recover. The intensive care team thinks that given there are no signs of real progress, a tracheostomy would not be warranted and would be a quote-unquote waste. Both teams have decided to speak to you and your family independently, and you would then need to make your views heard and clearly state what you want and what you believe is in the best interest of your father. It's often that the intensive care team has more decision-making power compared to the parent medical team in those situations, but of course it often depends as well. It's also extremely important that you and your family know what you want for your critically ill loved one in this situation. What would your father want in this particular situation? If you feel like you and your family are getting pushed towards a quote-unquote withdrawal of limitation, withdrawal or limitation of treatment, and if you don't take no for an answer and don't let people get you to sign any paperwork, if you don't think it's the right course of action and if you don't stand behind it 100%. If you need more information about this topic, you can also read 2 blog posts if you need more information. Just follow the links in the ebook of this video. You can follow the proven 5-step process on how to be in control and influential if your loved one is a long-term patient in intensive care or is facing treatment limitations. And the other blog post is the 5 questions you need to ask the intensive care team if they're talking about futility of treatment, withdrawal of life support, or about withdrawal of treatment. The example I have just given to you should give you an understanding of what might be going on behind the scenes and how it might impact on your critically ill loved one's care. It could be a different and yet similar scenario if your loved one gets admitted to intensive care after heart surgery and things are not going well and there have been issues and complications, and a prolonged stay in intensive care may be looming for your loved one with an uncertain outcome. There may be differing views of the intensive care and the cardiothoracic team. In any situation where you think that there may be differing views and or maybe even competing interests of the different medical teams involved, just speak to the teams independently and try and get an understanding of where they stand and what you need to do to get your voice heard. If you feel like your and your family's voice are not heard, you need to speak up and you mustn't take no for an answer. Believe it or not, but making some noise is actually a pretty good strategy and it generally works well. This is the first part of the video, and just click on the video.